come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks, David Deal, and you on this hump day. As always, we're with you during lunchtime on Wednesdays from noon to 1. Talking all things Big Blue, 201-939-4513 is the phone number. That's how you get on board. Also, hashtag Giants Chat. That is how you tweet us. I'll be monitoring your tweets throughout the show, and I will share them with David so he can react like he always does. What's up, man?
How's everything going?
Everything's great.
Good.
Great. I mean, I know I say this each and every week, but it's just kind of like, I can't believe it's week 8. I can't believe it's week 9.
I mean, know. It's amazing how fast everything is going.
Let me ask you, does the season fly by more so for you as a player or more so as a commentator?
I would say more as a player because you're so wrapped up in the routine day in and day out that, you know, all of a sudden you look at the schedule and you're like, wow, we're halfway done already. It's amazing. So I think as a player, it definitely goes by quicker because you're so focused day in and day out that the weeks just start piling up. And before you know it, you're midway through the season looking at your schedule, thinking to yourself, wow, we don't have that many more opportunities left. And you realize how much each game and each week that you're out there, how important each one is because how fast and how slim the margin is to capture what goal you have in mind. And for this Giants team to capture the NFC East, tough loss in New Orleans coming off of that one. And when you play a game like that and it's in the division and it's such a tight race in the NFC East, those games are huge down the stretch, counting up, okay, what other NFC games did they win? Where are they at in those records? So that way you're not relying on anybody else. You're taking care of business yourself.
Let me ask you, because before we start looking forward to the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Giants have to hit the road again and head to Tampa, down to Florida to take them on. But let's look back, as always, and that game against the Saints, as entertaining as it was for everyone who was watching, what does that game do for a team, specifically a defense as a whole, as well as kind of, you know, when you lose a game like that, how do you pick yourself back up, David, brush yourself off and say, okay, you know what, we're not out of this, we've got Tampa next?
Well, the first thing you do is as a defense, I mean, you look at where the breakdowns were and what you need to do to correct them, whether it's, you know, a mental error, whether it's undiscipline, whether it's a lack of communication, whether it's a lack of fundamentals executed. You look at that one and you learn from it right away and figure out what you need to do moving forward. Because, you know, when I talked about this last week, I said this isn't a Matt Castle or a Colin Kaepernick. This is a Drew Brees. This is an elite quarterback that if he has time and if you're not on your X's and O's and play disciplined throughout, he's going to find ways to pick you apart and he's going to find ways to beat you. And, you know, the biggest statistic coming away from me into this game was 50 attempts, 3 QB hits, and no sacks. He had plenty of time to stretch the field. He had five passes thrown for over 20-plus yards. It just goes to show that when you give a quarterback like this time that can see the field, he can make big plays. And going into this one, into the Bucs game now, you realize that's huge. Now you're going up against a young rookie whose fundamental flaw coming out from college has been his footwork, thrown off of his back foot when he has pressure, when he has people up at his feet, and when he takes that risk to throw the football across the middle, it's going to come down to pressure. It's going to come down to hitting him, getting into his face, getting pressured down the bow, down through those A-gaps right next to the centers, and flush him to your defensive end so that you can come away with turnovers. Because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 3-0 when he does not throw an interception, and they're 0-3 when he throws an interception. It's plain and simple.
Well, I and it's interesting you said this because this is something that I talked about on my radio show last week, and that is when you look at the wins and losses for the Giants, okay, the losses against Tony Romo, Matt Ryan, Sam Bradford, and now Drew Brees. The wins against Kirk Cousins, Tyrod Taylor, Colin Kaepernick, and Matt Castle. Big difference.
Big difference.
Big difference. So now what I find interesting is now you've got a Giants team who's heading into a matchup with Tampa Bay. Rookie quarterback, as you just said. But this is a rookie quarterback that is learning, developing, growing, and getting better each and every week. And he's not turning. When he first came into the NFL, he was a turnover machine.
Yes.
And he has not been doing that. He's playing smarter football. He has Mike Evans, who's finally out of that hamstring issue ailment that was holding him back. Now, from what I understand, Vincent Jackson is going to go. And
Austin Seferian Jenkins.
There you go. From what I understand, he's going to be back. And if you saw what Ben Watson was able to do against this Giants defense last week, to me, that is the biggest key going into this game, is because he is a very, very dynamic, athletic, and good tight end.
He really is. And if you look at the way that Dirk Cutter and this Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense assembles and gets things together, is number one, they know that they have to be balanced. They know that they need to get Doug Martin his carries, not only to make sure that they're not taking the pressure off of Jameis Winston, but they also have a starting left tackle and a right guard who are rookies. So they have to bring them along, and they've got to slow things down in the pass rush for them. Once they get the run game going, it allows them to take their shots with play action, bootleg, naked, get him outside of the pocket with Jameis Winston so that he can see the field. And Dirk Cutter has found that balance for him to where he's not putting it all on Jameis Winston's shoulders, where they've been able to get the run game going. Doug Martin has had a resurgence because he's been injured in the past, especially last season. He barely played. So he has had a resurgence because of his health, because of the offense that Dirk Cutter has now brought over. And now what you're seeing is Jameis Winston doesn't have to make that big throw. He's not forcing that big play because of the other fundamentals and aspects of this offense are allowing him to take a deep breath back and go to the check down, get the ball out of bounds where he doesn't have to feel like he has to force it. So it's going to be a huge game. And this is a game, as a Giants fan, it scares you because this may be a young Tampa Bay Buccaneers football team, but they've showed resiliency. You go back to 2 weeks ago, they were lost to Washington. They were up 24 points. Same thing in this game. They started creeping down, and it got where they were up 20 points. Atlanta comes back, but they found a way to win this game, and it was in Jameis Winston's hands. And the overtime drive, his 16-play game winner, he converted 3 third downs. So he has that confidence going into this football game, and so does this young football team, that they can find a way to win the football game even when things look bleak and it almost looked like deja vu for them last week.
Again, we're taking your calls, 201-939-4513, right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hashtag Giants chat as well. Really quick, if you missed the Tom Coughlin press conference, a few things that he did communicate. And first and foremost, let's talk about some of the players that are and are not practicing right now as we're hosting this show. Prince Amukamara is practicing, but individual drills, and also he said he might play a little scout team today. John Beeson is a no-go. Victor Cruz is a no-go, and there is no timetable right now in regard to Victor Cruz's return. Larry Donnell is a no-go. Reuben Randall is a no-go. You've got Jeff Schwartz, JT Thomas, both dealing with an ankle, Unga dealing with a neck, and this is the positive here. JPP will practice today, and in listening to what Tom Coughlin told the media, very optimistic that there's a chance that JPP might play against Tampa Bay. Fingers crossed that he does, because we know this defense needs him.
They definitely do. Like I stated, the facts of Drew Brees' stats of only being hit 3 times in that entire game in New Orleans. So they've got to find ways to create pressure, and they've got to be able to do it with their front four. It's going to be important to see where Prince is at right now. We all saw the way that Wade and Hosley played outside, and it was not good. They need Prince back so that all the pressure can be split amongst DRC, who's been playing lights out, and now Prince on the other side, so that they can do things more with the linebackers, more with pressure packages, because that way you can rely on your one-on-one coverage. If you're shaky and you have any doubts, it takes away your ability to be more physical and more aggressive with the way that you're able to attack a quarterback. And And like I said, you know, when you're facing up against a rookie quarterback and Jameis Winston, you've got to get hits, you've got to get pressure, and you've got to force things out of him in order to come away with the win, because this quarterback can throw every route. He has the arm talent. He has the strength to do it. He has the 2 6'5" receivers out there. But you've got to be able
and the tight end coming back.
But you've got to be able to hit him and pressure him.
All right. Want to remind you, fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter the promo code New York to play for free today. And just a quick reminder, at the end of the show, I'm going to give you some bargain players for DraftKings before we do sign off. So you want to stay tuned for that. Let's go to our phone lines.
All right, perfect.
David, so we are going to kick off line number one. Ed is calling in from New York. Ed, your first stop. Let's bring it strong, my friend.
Oh, I got it. I'm going to come strong because I couldn't get in yesterday. Thanks for taking my call. I kind of wanted to break down the defense, and just in my opinion, and I'm going to get there and just give me a second. From looking at the league now and looking at the Giants' great history on defense, we've always had a game-changing player in our front seven. And with our biggest problem this year was JPP went down, and we didn't have that. My point is, I really thought Kennard was going to take that role over. I know we talked about it a lot in the preseason shows here, and he just hasn't. I don't know that he's regressed, but he hasn't stepped up to become the player we thought he might have been from the linebacker position. And I think that's really hurting us. I really expected him to do a lot more this year with pass rushing and just moving to becoming a great player, and I just haven't seen that. I would love to get some feedback from David.
Well, he hasn't really been healthy.
Yeah,
that
was the first thing that I was going to say is obviously his health, his inability to practice consistently, he's missed games. That's tough as a young player when you're trying to improve and make progress each and every week. But I think the biggest flaws is in coverage and getting back, covering running backs out of the backfield, tight ends. We've seen signs of what he is able to do and what he's capable of doing. But it's all about consistency and doing it play in and play out. I think that's the biggest thing of where being out on the practice field, getting that view, seeing those crossers, getting that where you have to hit your depth, where you got to get to a point in this defense is huge for him. And like I think all of us are expecting huge things out of Kennard and the rest of this defense. But let's face it, a lot more pressure is put on your linebackers in your secondary when you are unable to get that pressure that you need by your front four.
Yeah, I agree with that. I completely agree with that point. I just for what the league is now, players in his position on other teams are just taking step A to step B, a lot of them, and becoming stars. And our guys that we're looking at every year that are close don't make those strides for whatever reason, whether they're hurt, whatever it might be. I was, I'm not blaming it on him, but I really thought he was going to become, and maybe he still will, don't get me wrong, but it just doesn't look like it's happening this year. I just don't know.
Well, thank you for the phone call. I'm going to go back to something Ray Lewis. Do you remember when Ray Lewis was playing for the Ravens and then Tony Siragusa and all those guys left after they won the Super Bowl? And then what was happening? His stats went down. And he came out and he said, listen, I can't be the linebacker you need me to be if you don't go out and you draft some offensive linemen. So what did they do? They went out and they got Haloti Ngata and they got Kelly Gregg. And then all of a sudden his stats went back up again. Linebackers are not built to take on offensive linemen. Linebackers are built to take on fullbacks, to try to get to those running backs, to try to... So, you're right. I mean, you're right, and you hear other very successful linebackers, and you look at their stats. If you don't have the horses up front that are going to do their job that then allow the linebackers to do theirs, you're not going to see the results that maybe we would see if the defensive line was a little bit better from Kennard.
And it goes hand in hand because, like I said, we've seen this defensive group, especially the up front. We've seen when they've been stout at the point of attack to eat up double teams. The outside defensive ends have maintained gap control, discipline outside, forcing things from the outside in right to those. But it's all about consistency. They haven't been doing well on the double teams. Guards have been getting up to the linebackers at the second level. And it showed this past game in the Saints game. It's So when you're going into this one, when you know that they're going to rely on Doug Martin, when they're going to run this football and they're going to go with young offensive linemen at the two spots on this field, you have got to maintain that control. And it's going to rely on the front four of the defense in the run game, making sure that they're stout like they were in the front half of this season. And now in the back end, watching how this defense from the linebacker position to the secondary, how they play up against these threats. Because we hit it. Mike Evans, Jackson, and Austin Seferian Jenkins can all play huge factors if they do not play disciplined football and if they don't get the pressure on Jameis Winston. Because let's face it, that's everything in this game. Pressure Jameis Winston.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Abdul calling in from Minneapolis. Abdul, welcome in.
Hey, guys. I have a question for David. I'm really looking forward to get Will Beatty back. And I was wondering, how, as an offensive lineman who has been injured, how long would it? How long does it take to get up and ready to play? Because I think they're kind of taking long. I'm surprised how long it's taken him. I thought he'd be ready this week. And how long does it take to get ready, like full strength wise and technique, to get on the field after an injury?
It's a great question. I've never torn my pec, so I don't know exactly how it feels, the surgery process, when you can start benching and things like that. But let's face it, he needs to be out on the football field. I think every Giants fan knows that. I know everybody was expecting last week getting him accumulated, getting him back out on the field, getting some reps in individual. They're saying that it's going to pick up this week towards doing some more stuff on scout team, I believe, getting him some more reps. Number one, it's not only for him just about conditioning and getting into shape, but as an offensive lineman, I mean, your pec, your strength, locking out at the point of attack, punching, making sure that if somebody pulls and torques you, that you have that strength in your pec. So I firsthand don't know because I've never torn my pec. But at the same time, we're at a point in the season that if he's healthy, you got to get him out on the football field, whether it's starting him out, putting him at jumbo tight end.
I was just going to say, to get him some reps,
to get him back in the football
game. I was just going to say, so what do you do with him?
That's one of the ways. Whether it's putting him at jumbo tight end, whatever they've got to do, they've got to make sure that after this week, if he does not go, that his opportunity is that New England Patriots game. Because if they have any chance moving forward, he has got to be on the football field.
Interesting. I was listening to sports talk radio, and I heard someone talk about how Ereck Flowers would be a better right tackle than he is a left tackle.
Well, because he's bigger, he's stronger, he's a mauler. You think of a Kareem McKenzie at right tackle.
Do you feel that he's out of position right now? Do you feel that when Beatty comes back that they should move Flowers back to right tackle?
That's a great question. And the problem that I would have saying moving him back to right tackle is because he's been playing left this entire time. He's been solely focused on left. And now that he's gotten into a groove, now that he's making progress, you know, to do that to a young player midseason, I don't know how he would adapt to doing that because of him and Justin going through everything throughout the same time over and over. I think if Will Beatty comes back, I would put him at the right side. Have him and Schwartz on the right side, have Newhouse as the backup. So number one, you get your Beatty back, your offensive tackle back, and then you strengthen the side that's been struggling the most, and that's been the right side of the offensive line.
And I have one more statement. I think getting JPP back will also help Hankins. I think right now Hankins is getting doubled. I think he's getting the majority of the attention because he's basically the only defensive threat besides Ayers also.
I agree with you because
I think getting JPP back will actually help free up Hankins. I think we'll see his pass rushing improve. At least that's my hope.
I agree with you. Thank you for the phone call, but I mean.
And that's a very positive and glass half full perspective to have, but we don't know, right? We don't know what percentage of JPP is coming back, right?
No, we don't. But that's what we're all looking for and all waiting to see this week. And he makes a great point because, honestly, as an offensive lineman, when it comes to pass protection, and if you're looking at the Giants front four, who are really scaring you that you feel like you need to slide your protection, keep an extra tight end, or use a running back to chip right now? You really don't have that anybody that you're really scared of that can each and every play and pass protection beat you one-on-one. So what does it allow guards to do? It allows guards to jam and hold that three technique while that center is coming over on that defensive tackle, and then you could take your hits at the and worry about the defensive end. If you have a defensive end that you are like, oh, man, we need to get help to him, you're punching and you're going and letting that center come over. And as a guard, you're thinking, I need to get over to my offensive tackle as quick as possible to protect his inside. We're not worried about the three technique. We're worried about this defensive end. So, once again, it plays hand in hand. You have a big defensive tackle like Hankins who you know can penetrate and can cause problems into the backfield. As a guard, I'm going to hold point and I'm going to hold this guy off as long as possible because I know my center is going to come over and I know my tackle can do the job by himself.
Interesting. 201-939-4513. We're going to continue with your calls, but let's take some tweets. Hashtag Giants chat. Now, this is an interesting tweet, and it's from Joe. And he says, the Giants have always played up to competition. New England in 07, Green Bay in 2011. Do we have the personnel in 2015 to beat the Patriots in week 10?
We got to get through week 9,
but this
Joe.
But this is why I share this tweet, because, yes, you know what? Next man up is the Tampa Bay Bucs, okay?
Yes.
But then you've got New England. Now, New England is taking on Washington this week at home.
Okay.
No disrespect to the Washington Redskins, but I think it's safe to say that we anticipate them to
New England them. To win the game, yes.
Okay, so New England would be coming to New York to take on the Giants November 15th, more than likely undefeated.
Okay.
And there is already talk out there that, you know, is this the year for them, that they do go undefeated. But as we know, and as Joe just tweeted, the Giants have had their number. Is this a game? How do you not look forward to New England, knowing that they're coming here? Is that an issue for any of these guys in the locker room?
No, I mean, obviously, no. I don't think it's an issue for anybody in the locker room because you're coming off a loss where you just lost to the Saints. And you know that you're going on the road playing up against another division team. So you're not looking past this game because, number one, you didn't win your last game so that you have the confidence to say, hey, we can look past this one. But also, you can't control anything in the future. What you can control is now. And in regards to comparing it to that 07 team and 11 team, what did that team in 07 and 11 have? They had pass rushers.
They got to the quarterback.
They got to Tom Brady.
Boy. Yep.
And that is the key for not only Tom Brady, but any quarterback. You've got to be able to apply pressure and hits in order to rattle them. If you do not, it's going to be a long day.
All right, this is from Ben. He says, David, are Jeff Schwartz's mistakes more physical or mental?
I think for him, obviously, he still has the ankle issue that he's working with, but it's more fundamental and it's more technique than anything. A lot of it is working his outside arm and not getting it in and having that inside hand as a nice punch. He's been getting beat around the edge. I think it has more to do with his fundamentals than anything. But also, I think that at some point, you've got to just maul people. You've got to be physical. You've got to fight people. And I'm not saying that as a
joke.
Put
a hat on a hat.
You've got to put a hat on a hat, and you've got to fight. So that sometimes when those fundamental flaws show up, your fight and your want to get the job done outweighs any of those things. If you're a guy who is willing to fight play after play, you may not be the best fundamentally, but did you get the job done at the end of the day, yes or no? That's what matters more than the fundamental things.
Let's go to Dennis calling in from Miami. He wants to talk about the Tampa Bay Bucs. Dennis, welcome in.
Hey, Anita. Hey there, David. How you guys doing today?
Great.
How are you, Dennis?
Good, not bad. I mean, you guys really did steal all my thunder in the beginning of the call, but, you know, I did want to mention, you know, we need to keep our eye on Doug Martin. He's hot this year.
Yeah.
The Bucs are playing solid on all three phases of their offense, I mean, on their team, which we've never seen that in the past, and you can't underestimate this team. 17 sacks, you know, I hope these stats are prevalent for all our fans keeping that up, that, you know, the Bucs are no joke. They're a team that we should be reckoning with. It's been brought up before. I think Charlie brought this up, one of our favorite callers. Hands up, O-line. You know, if we keep our hands up, It'll make a big difference. And just having JPP on the field, his presence, I'd rather have a 75% JPP than a no percent. Do you feel that even if he's at 75%, his presence will demand the Bucks go, oh, boy, here's JPP. We got to account for him now, which will open up some other opportunities for our guys. I mean, is that an incorrect thought?
No, I don't think it's an incorrect thought.
I want to take your answer, but I need to ask Anita a personal question from my wife.
Okay.
So I'd like to hear your thoughts on the JPP being on there, even if he's 75%.
No, I agree that it would definitely work out. You know, you think about when you use a wide receiver as a decoy. You know, having him out on the field is definitely going to be a wild card because nobody has film on him as of to date.
Right.
Nobody has seen him since last season. So you don't know what you're going to expect if you're the opposing team right now. So him being in there, if he's out on the field, would you be more prone to slide your protection his way? Absolutely. So it'll open up things for other players. But like I think we're all waiting to see is at what level and how much throughout this game will he be used, whether it's just in third down, what type of packages he'll be involved in. But, yes, I agree with you. You'd rather have the 75% of him on the field than none of him because of the ability for an offense to say, well, he still is JPP out there.
Right, that's Jason Pierre-Paul. Let's go, boys. I hope he's out there. I think he's going to make an impact, and I think his presence is going to be – it's going to be the clincher for us. I think that's going to assist our defense in, you know, keeping Doug Martin contained and maybe holding it to our own. So I won't keep the call much longer. Anita, your First and 10 show, your appearances there are awesome. My wife started watching it because you're on the First and 10 show, but – the Saints First and 10, you had a pair of red shoes on. She wants to know what shoes those are, and she begged me to ask you when I called in.
Michael Kors.
Michael Kors, okay. And one last thing. I have a hobby where I create patches for friends and so forth, and I created a patch for one of my crazy jackets for my Giants jacket for Odell Beckham. I call it the Defense Reaper. I'd like to contribute it to the Big Blue Kickoff live wall, maybe a spot right there by David's right shoulder by the Wheaties box. If you have a moment, if you could check out my Twitter account, it's at PatchesMcGee99.
PatchesMcGee.
99. You'll see what I'm talking about. I'd like to send it and donate it. My wife had me update it with a little bit of breast cancer awareness. I custom made it myself. And she suggested that I look into having it put on the wall, and how would I go about sending that to you lovely folks over there at BBKL?
Do this. Go online, get the address, because I don't know it off the top of my head. Get the address of the training facility and send it to me, to my attention, and I'll make sure it gets on the wall.
You are the most awesome. And I thank you guys for every show you guys do, First and 10, Big Blue Kickoff Live, everything you guys do keeps us fans going. Giants, go. Bucks, go down. Patriots, you're next. Hands up, O-line. Thank you, guys.
Dennis, thanks for the phone call. That's pretty cool. Wow.
Wow, what?
It's just cool. It's a cool call.
Yeah. No,
you're gonna have a patch over your left shoulder.
Patches McGee is gonna hook me up with a patch. But no, I mean,
I love it.
You're not surprised. Fans are passionate. They watch the game. They have more knowledge now than what's ever been before with the information, and I think everybody's on the same page on what needs to happen moving forward here for the Giants football team.
Let me ask you, she was on the other foot in regard to maybe, you know, the same situation that happened with JPP happened to an offensive lineman, and he comes back. Is there motivation for that team, that unit, because he's back, all that he's had to go through, his first game? Like, does it kind of take you to another level? Is that something that we should expect from this defensive line? JPP back, if it is his first game, like, you know, the emotion
think about where JPP was at mentally to where he's at now. I mean, the thing that he loves the most, playing the game of football, was almost completely taken away from him. So you can't help but have nothing but the positive aspects and energy from the surrounding group to rally around him and bring him back to who he is as a football player. So you definitely feel that injury because, you know, figure all the adversity that he fought back to or fought through to get back on the football field to fight with these guys on the field. He's been a part of that group for a long time. So, yeah, having somebody like that re-energizes the defensive line, and everybody on the football field, because they know how important it is for him to not only be on the field but to produce for them as a player.
Really quick note before I continue with our calls.
Okay.
So I sent out a tweet. You know, of course, we're promoting the show and everything. So Brandon Myers, who's now the tight end.
Yeah, B. Myers.
Right. So he retweets it. He retweets for our show. And Corey Webster retweeted for our show.
Brandon Myers is one of my favorite tight end teammates ever.
Did you go to his wedding, by the way?
No, I did not. I was
down in Florida, right?
Yeah, I was down in Florida, but... Brandon was a great teammate to have when he played with us with the Giants. Another Big Ten guy, an Iowa guy. So it's happy to hear that he's doing well. And, yeah, C-Web, man, Corey Webster. Corey and I always 1-2 running out of the tunnel when they'd first bring us out for stretching.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thought I'd share
great
that with
memories,
you.
Great memories, yeah.
So supporting our show. Let's go to line four. Jeffrey is calling in. Jeffrey, welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, Jeffrey, it's Wednesday. We need more energy.
Yeah,
out of
Jeffrey,
you, buddy.
Pump it
Come
up,
on.
Man. Are you still in bed?
Pump it up.
There we go.
Now I'm pretty pumped over here in England. I have just an edge question about the offense. We've seen a very prolific offense in the last game, something that we probably haven't seen in a long while. I just want to know.
Oh, no. Unfortunately,
we lost him from London. He's breaking in and out.
I think
Jeffrey.
that's why he's so tired. The time difference. But Jeffrey, please try to call back if you can. So cool that he's watching from London.
It's great.
Let's go to line one. Joe's calling in from Pennsylvania. Joe, you're up.
Hey, great to talk to you people. The last play of the game, I want to ask you: Am I right there that they called that penalty from up on the booth, or the ref seen it and then called the face mask?
That's what they're saying. I mean, it was a late flag coming out for that one as well. You know, it's unfortunate on a game like that. Number one, I've been in that experience.
Have you?
Ball.
Have you?
Oh,
but have
yeah,
you been
DeSean
in that?
Jackson. Yeah, I remember quite distinctly a punt return on a play like that with that much time left, kick the ball out of bounds.
No, I mean, but
so I've been a part of that. But a late flag like that, hanging,
but called,
that lingered,
but called because from, it was shown
I
on the
know,
screen,
it was shown on the Jumbotron,
and the
all
Saints
that stuff.
Fans reacted.
No.
So then the ref said, "Oh, well, wait a minute." I mean,
no.
Have you ever been in that situation
no, I
before?
Have not. I
mean,
haven't.
It's bizarre.
I've
Come
been
on.
In a situation where obviously you hear the crowd reaction, everybody's pointing, and usually that what leads to maybe a challenge flag,
right.
But it doesn't lead to a penalty at that point in the game that's going to completely change the win-loss of it. So, no, I've never been a part
this
of it.
Is what, this is what I'm getting at. Will they call anything but, like, personal fouls? Do they call them up in a booth like that? Will they? I know they want to call pass interference. That's what gets me some of these touch fouls sometimes when they call them on us.
But, no. They did personal fouls and things like that. That's usually all vision by the referees and everybody out on the football field. That does not come from the box.
Yeah. And going back, I'm more concerned about Beattie, how he would be. I think Flowers is going to fit in no matter where you put him, the way he's playing. You know, I'm more concerned about Beattie, him being up the snuff there. And we're going to have a dogfight with all these teams, and we got to be in there. I am disappointed, and I guess the Giants are, with Beeson and Cruz, you know, being injured. And our hats got to go off to Eli, to Harris, to Vereen. Them guys been playing great. And who is going to root for? I guess going to root for Dallas big this week, this over the Eagles, I guess.
Oh, thank you for the phone call. He's talking about where everything sits in the division. So right now the Giants are still number one, thank goodness, at 4-4. Washington is 3-4. As we said, they're taking on the New
England
Patriots.
Yep.
Chances are more than likely they're going to go 3-5. And then you've got Philadelphia and Dallas playing each other. Well, Dallas is sitting at 2-5, Philadelphia 3-4. So, yes, Giant fans want to root for Dallas this week.
Yes.
That was his point.
As much as it irks the Giants fans to do that, yes.
Right.
In regards to division, yeah, you want a Dallas win.
Also, just while we're looking at the standings right now, so New England is undefeated. They take on Washington. Chances are they go 8-0. Cincinnati, unbelievable Cincinnati, right?
I know.
Have you done one of their games yet?
No, I have not.
Wow. Cincinnati, 7-0. They're taking on Cleveland, and it was announced today. Johnny
Manziel is going to be the starter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's a coin toss of what you're going to get there.
By the way, that was his first game he started last year.
Yep.
I remember.
Did not turn out well.
Because I started him in fantasy.
It did not turn out well.
Oh.
Yes.
Dumb move on my part. So Cincinnati goes up against Cleveland. Chances are Cincinnati goes 8-0.
Yep.
Okay. Denver is 7-0. They head to Indianapolis. They take on the Colts. That's going to be a fun 4 o'clock game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And Carolina is undefeated, and Carolina takes on the Green Bay Packers.
That's going to be a phenomenal football game,
isn't
it?
One.
That's going to be a great game.
So all these, so out of all these four teams that are still undefeated, safe to say that the Denver and Carolina games are the ones that you have the most concern about, right? In regard to them getting their first loss of the season,
I would say so. But at that same time, you know, these Cincinnati Cleveland games are always close, in-state rivals. You know, both of those teams absolutely hate each other.
So the whole Johnny Manziel, the whole Johnny Manziel thing is not.
I'm just saying, then you're going to Johnny Manziel. It's that's going to be the what everybody's going to watch to see what Johnny Manziel are you going to get out onto the football field.
Again, if you missed the head coach Tom Coughlin's press conference a little bit earlier on today, you can also watch it on Giants.com. But a few things that he did share: the Bucs 2-1 in their last three games, but could be 3-0. They only lost to Washington by one point. They're fourth in rushing with Doug Martin. Doug Martin is in a contract year, and if you know anything about contract years, players always ball out, and he's actually having quite a good season.
Second in the NFL with 7 carries of 20-plus yards right now, too.
Head coach Tom Coughlin mentioned Logan Mankins, offensive lineman.
Yeah, veteran offensive lineman. He's the one that gets everything going for those guys up front, and he's really helped their left tackle, Smith, who's a rookie, and then Allie Marpet on the right side. Both of those guys are making improvements, but the one thing with Allie Marpet at the right guard position, he did have 3 penalties against the Washington Redskins, so they were costly ones at that, too.
Talking about the defense, he said this is definitely a Lovie Smith defense. Fast linebackers, they pressure the quarterback. They're plus 13 in takeaways. They're really good at causing fumbles. So Giants are really going to have to be ball protection. You got to hold on to that football because they're coming in and they are really going after the football. They're really big in regards to causing fumbles. Also, great special teams with Bobby Rainey.
Bobby Rainey.
They throw the deep ball a lot because Jameis Winston has that kind of arm. And if the middle of the field is open, he will run. And, again, that goes to the situation with what's going on with the linebackers.
Yes, it does. One of the things I'll say in regards to their defense, there's rookie starting middle linebacker Quan Alexander played with a heavy heart. His brother, his younger brother, was murdered 2 days before the game
last week. His brother was a teenager.
He came out 11 tackles. He had an interception, forced a fumble recovery. Talk about, playing with something heavy on his heart and the way to go out and play for his brother the way that he did. You can't give anything but credit. And it showed for them when they played throughout this game because the defense really rallied behind him. And like I said, this is a game that if you're a Giants fan, this is a game that scares you going on the road, going up against a young team like this that showed their resiliency, that you know that they're going to want to prove themselves up against this Giants football team. And you know Jameis Winston as a quarterback, he likes to put himself at a high level. You know he's going to want to try to outperform Eli Manning in this game as well.
201-939-4513. Again, reminder, Giants fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. It's changing the way I'm playing fantasy. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter the promo code New York to claim your free entry today. And again, at the end of the show, I'm going to give you some bargain players heading into week 9 on DraftKings. Let's go to line 2. Scott's calling in from New York. He wants to talk about JPP. Scott, welcome in.
Hey, how's everybody doing this afternoon?
Great.
Doing great, Scott.
I don't know if you remember me, David. I called about you with Paul, I think, about, say, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I was talking about Jake Long and Jared Allen. I'll put that for another time. But just trying to refresh your memory on some things here. As an offensive lineman, or actually in the trenches of linemen, aren't people expecting too much from JPP? Missing a index finger and having part of the thumb missing is going to be a huge compensation for his ability to play. I grant he'll be pumped, he'll be motivated and everything else, but are we expecting a little too much on that end of it? And the other question I have is about the offensive line again. When you guys played the 11 team and the 2011 team, you guys were like organized thugs, and I mean that in a positive sense and as a compliment. I don't see that same emphasis and togetherness power with the current offensive line. I don't see the push-off or, you know, like taking them on and say, this is my challenge. I'm going to fight through this and go with it. I don't know what's your opinion?
Okay, in regards to number one, the JPP situation, I think that's what everybody's waiting to see, how he will be able to perform and play with his hand and with the cast on it. Because for a guy who played opposite offensive tackle and played up against JPP in practice day in and day out and watching him play as a football player, number one, his ability to stack at the point of attack, whether it's an offensive tackle or a tight end. When you're that outside force, you've got to be able to stack, shed, and force everything back to inside or shed for the tackle. How is he going to be able to hold up with that hand, pull, twist, or do any of that stuff? As a pass rusher, not only was he a speed guy, but he set up power with his speed rush. So what does he mean? He turns an outside rush into a one-arm stab or one-arm stab to club. How is he going to be able to use that hand, grab, twist, or do any of that stuff with hand control and inside hand leverage? As a former offensive lineman, when I had thumb surgery and I had a cast on my thumb, what did every defensive lineman do? They went Boom. Right after my thumb and right after my hand. So we all are waiting to see.
And then after the game, hey, how you doing?
Oh, yeah.
How's your hand?
Yeah, hey, your
How's
hand
you,
okay?
You all right,
yeah,
dude?
Of course. So I think we're all waiting to see with practice and what he does now moving forward, how will he be able to use that hand? In regard to the offensive line, I answered that question a little bit earlier. I think when I was talking, you know, with the fundamentals and technique, and sometimes your technique isn't going to be perfect, but are you a fighter? Are you going to attack? And are you going to do something and block to the whistle and up until after the whistle to get the job done? That is a big thing, and that's, I think, something that Jeff Schwartz needs to work on is, hey, things might not work out for you technique-wise each and every time, but are you going to have that will that you say, when it comes down to me or him, I will do whatever it takes to not let him make the play? And that's what I think we all are waiting to see for them cohesively as a group, because that's what they need to do here down the stretch, November, December. You win games in the NFL and in the NFC East by having that attitude and running the ball right at people and not being scared.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, wasn't sure if you had another question, Scott. Let's continue with our calls. We go to line three. AJ's calling in from South Carolina. AJ, you're on board.
The Giants' pass defense give a lot of plays in the air. That has to get better.
AJ, I think you're speaking like everybody. Yeah, it's going to come down to coverage, being disciplined, no miscues. I think it's going to be important to have Prince back this week. Hopefully we'll see how he progresses throughout the week. We know that he's going to get stuff during individual. He's going to get some more amped up reps as we come through. Because let's just face it, Wade and Hosley did not get it done last week. I was a little bit surprised because I would have thought that we would have seen a little bit more of Trumaine McBride out there instead of Wade. But they went with the hand that they thought would work best, and it didn't work out as well as it should have, and it didn't work out for the Giants' favor. So I think it's going to be very important to have Prince back. Having two corners like Prince and DRC allows Steve Spagnuolo and gives him a lot more confidence to be more flexible and more aggressive with the game plan. If you're not confident in one of your corners, let alone both of your corners, your pressure package, your blitz package isn't going to matter, because if your corner cannot hold up one-on-one, it's going to be a long day. So I think it's going to be important to have Prince back and see where he is health-wise with the strength of his pec.
201-939-4513 is the phone number. Let's check out some of our tweets as well. Okay. Hashtag Giants Chat. David, how great has Weston Richburg been this year? He's been dominant in the passing game.
He is right where he needs to be at his pure position, and that's at center. That's the position that the Giants drafted him at. But due to the different looks and the different injuries last year, you know, he had to move out and play guard. But he is a great center. He can play this position for a long period of time. He understands and has a grasp of this offense completely. Is smart with checking, making all the calls. Now it's just now getting everything going. Now the fit now is not unusual between him, Justin Pugh, and Jeff Schwartz. Now it's those three guys really owning the inside of the interior of the offensive line, because that's where your big chunks and where your big gains come from as an offensive line. Yes, as an offensive tackle, you've got to clear the way. You've got to move defensive ends. But it's all up to those three interior guys to get good double teams at the point of attack on those big, stout defensive tackles and those nose tackles, so that you're able to get up to the linebackers and really spring those things up to the second level.
What was your favorite position to play on the offensive line?
I liked, obviously, I played everything on the offensive line.
What was your favorite?
I love playing offensive tackle and left tackle, because you challenge yourself week in and week out up against the best. And for me, I took my mentality from a guard out to the tackle position, because I wanted to get after people. I wanted to hit them in the run game. I wanted to wear those guys down, because those defensive ends are 250 pounds, 260 pounds max. You don't have those big 290-pounders like you used to have a Michael Strahan. So in order to slow them down, you'd have to be physical with them. You'd have to maul them. You'd have to get after them, so that in the third and fourth quarter, that's where, as an offensive line, where we'd have our big running gains and where you can slow them down.
Who was the one defensive lineman that every time you went up against, like, you guys would just talk smack? It was just ugly. You hated each other. You were like, you just wanted to.
Well, I mean, there weren't really specifics. There's a lot of defensive guys that like.
Give me
to
like
toss
one.
Trash.
Give me one guy that just, like, whenever you went up against him, it was just ugly.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say one guy. I mean, it was more teams. Like, it was a battle of pride. I mean, when you'd play up against Eagles fronts or Cowboys fronts or any type of front, 49ers, I mean, those were fistfight games. And you'd get yourself excited about the violence that would be taking place inside the lines, because as an offensive lineman, like you see myself, Sean, Rich, Snee, off the field you're one thing, but you've got to hit a switch and you've got to go to some place you don't want to go out on the football field. And we really liked controlling those things up front.
Well, it's funny, because my time in Baltimore, I hosted a radio show with Jonathan Ogden for about 3 years.
Same thing.
The biggest teddy bear, sweetest, kindest, most gentlest guy I've ever met in my life.
And then you'd put him at offensive tackle and he would punch you right in the face.
Insane.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, who are you?
Yeah.
Well, who are you out there? Because you are just a big teddy bear.
As an offensive lineman, I mean, same thing. Like I said, people see me with my daughter, see me doing things, and they're like, yeah, this is. And then you're a bodyguard. You're a protector. And that's what your job is as an offensive lineman. So, yeah, I mean, that's the way that you went into games, and that's the way that you fought. It's my will against his will, and I'm not going to back down to anyone.
If your daughter came to you and said, hey, I want to play women's professional football, what would you say to her?
You know what? I don't know what
I
would say to her.
Look at you, Swan. Did I just put you in the hot seat? I don't know what I would say to her.
I mean, she's not like that, though. She loves her gymnastics, her dance. She's actually a cheerleader for football games. So I wouldn't be surprised. But for when it comes to my daughter, whatever she decides to do, as long as she does it with all her heart and works hard, she can do whatever she'd like.
Awesome. All right, let's continue with our tweets. We go to Ricker81. He says, if VJax and ASJ is back, DRC, will he be on Evans? How do you see the DBs? If it is Evans, if it is Vincent Jackson, if it is Jenkins, the tight end, coming back, hopefully, fingers crossed, hopefully Prince plays. But if he doesn't, what do they do with DRC? How does the secondary handle all that?
I think that's a great question that we're going to have to wait and see established this week, because would you say that you would put him on one instead of the other? They're both the same type of threat with that ability to convert on third downs to get those yards after catch and contact and make big dynamic plays. I mean, they're both the same size. Obviously, Evans is a little bit younger, and Jackson's a more savvy vet when it comes to route combinations and his pattern running. But both of those guys provide the same amount of spark, play-making ability, and size at those outside positions, at those wide receiver positions. But I think you look at what we've talked about this entire year going back into the preseason. It's been the tight end. Tight ends have been a problem. And when any quarterback, like we saw last week, Drew Brees with Watson, Cam Newton to Olton, Dalton to Eifert, Brady to Gronkowski, when quarterbacks are able to get their tight ends involved, it spreads out defenses and it opens up those big one-on-one matchups for those guys outside, because it creates that one-on-one mismatch with a tight end against a linebacker. And then what do? You start cramming, you start doing different things in your defensive scheme, and it gives those big play receivers one-on-ones that they can break. So it's going to be important that they lack or stop his production at the tight end position. And also, I wouldn't say anything, and I wouldn't take anything away from the way that Doug Martin and Sims have caught out of the backfield as well. They've combined for 34 receptions, so they've gotten screens, they've gotten wheel routes, they've gotten those little swing passes out, because they've used those not only in the play game or play action game, but they've used those almost as an extension of the run,
right,
to slow things down and get people into open space.
201-939-4513. We go to line 4. Marco was calling in from Connecticut. Marco, welcome in.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's great to be with you too, Marco.
Thanks, David.
You got it, buddy.
So just to go back a little bit on the Saints game, and then I got just a question and a comment about John Beeson. I still, it's tough to say, but I still trust this defense with Steve Spagnuolo, even though after this total debacle defensively last week. And I thought it would have been nice after the McBride play. DRC's playing really well. I thought they could have took something from that, but they didn't come out on the winning end, and that was a tough one to swallow. But I think with no JT Thomas, no John Beeson, and Prince especially, I think Prince he's a huge factor in this in the run defense.
I agree.
If we can get him back, I really think because he's so physical, he could come down and he tackles well. I think he makes a big difference. My concern is about Beeson, and more about his inconsistency in playing. And he plays, and then he's out, and then he gets hurt. And then when he comes back, he's limited. And then he's able to play, and then something else happens, and he's limited again. And I don't want to pick on him. I mean, I love him. He's a captain of the team. But I want to know if you think there's anything to that. A veteran captain, he's a middle linebacker. Is there anything to that about not having somebody like that on the field? I mean, it's not an offensive line where you talk about inconsistency, or even a quarterback with in rhythm. But, David, I'd like to know if you think there's something to that. And also, maybe remind the fans what John Beeson does well and what the team is missing with him not on the field. Because I don't even remember what the guy does well anymore. That's how long I feel like it's been since he's been on the field.
Well, one of the things and why he's a captain is because of the way that he comes to practice and he comes to work each and every day. He's the one running the defensive meetings, making sure that everybody's on cue, watching film, going through everything right when they're done with lunch, when there's no coaches around. I think we've all seen how important it is to be a middle linebacker in Steve Spagnuolo's system. I mean, if you go back and you think about all those times that Antonio Pierce was in there, you'd see him pointing, you'd see him checking, you'd see him giving looks. But at an extent, I agree with you. His inability to be on the football field consistently hasn't given this defense exactly what it needs. If he was healthy this entire season, if he was out there, number one, he'd be making more plays. But number two, there would be a cohesiveness in the change of plays. What type of blitz does your defense like? What position do you want to put guys in to succeed? As well as we've seen ups and downs from Unga as a football player. You know, he hasn't been able to continue to make progress in coverage. He hasn't been able to play consistently. And I think it's a product of he's in, he's out. He's in, he's out. there's a lot of that that goes into it. So I know as tough as it is, as hard as it is to see John Beeson injured and not know what you're going to get from him, but at the same extent, first year in Steve Spagnuolo's system, you've got to have a veteran linebacker that has gone through things before, has seen things before, and can trust his eyes to put everybody in the same play, in the same coverage, in the same system.
He's got to be out there. With this stretch run, I mean, he is so important to be out there, and he knows it, and I know the team knows it. And I just one last thing, you brought up Unga. I think Unga, you know, he made this team. There's a role for him, absolutely, on this team. As a starting middle linebacker, I don't know. But there's a role for him to grow through as special teams. And I like when Unga is active while Beeson is a starting middle linebacker, because I think when Unga gets on the field, he can make plays in spurts. But I don't know in this next stretch run if he could actually command as a middle
starter.
Linebacker.
No, I agree with
Marco,
you.
Marco, thank you for the
phone
call.
It's due to inexperience, and he's still going to see things down the stretch in the NFL game that he's never seen before. But there is a role for him on the team. There is a role where they can find a happy medium of getting Beeson in, but still getting him his reps where he can be productive and provide the physical things that right now John Beeson doesn't have because of the injuries that he's had.
But, you know, what John Beeson brings to this team in regard to leadership, there is
no question about anything that he brings to leadership.
Yeah, I mean, but there is value in that.
Oh, yes.
But he has to be on the football field in order to really bring that full circle. And I am a big believer in Unga. Again, I will go back to the fact that we just don't have – the Giants don't have a great defensive line right now. I think if the Giants had a better defensive line, I think you'd see more productivity from Unga. I think his only – one of the negatives is that he's just can't – he's just not really great with coverage.
Agreed.
Right. Agreed. But – 201-939-4513. We're going to try to get two more calls in. We've got to make them quick. Let's go to Ernest. He wants to talk about Andre Williams. Ernest, you're up.
Yes. Well, I want to ask you about Andre Williams. Why are they running him? He's a big back, but they throw him around. He doesn't go anywhere. Why? What is the reason for holding on to him? The other running back, Duckworth, I can't pronounce his name correctly. But why not use him a little bit more? But Williams, he never goes anywhere. He doesn't really break a lot of tackles. You know, if there's a hole there and he makes it through, he may gain a few yards. But why do they consistently keep using him?
Going back to this one, we'll see in this game because Dark was actually on the injury list with the back right now. So we'll see moving forward here. But, I mean, if you go back and you look at the preseason, Darqua had a better preseason than Andre Williams. I mean, that's plain and simple. But moving here forward, we'll see what the health of Orleans Darqua. If he is out, Andre Williams has got to take advantage of his opportunity. He saw what happened 2 weeks ago when Orleans Darqua came in, played the way that he was capable of, earned his position out on the football field. It can easily happen to Andre Williams as long as he goes out on the field, is smart enough and patient enough to let holes open and hit holes when they develop.
Got to read the holes.
Read the holes. Read your linebackers who will bring you right to the play and put the ball away. Make sure you have ball security because this Tampa Bay team is right away. They're a stripping team. They use the old, like you used to see,
yep,
Brian Urlacher and all the Bears from Lovie Smith. They all start the lawnmower.
You rip
that ball out. One person holds up. The other two come in, and all they're doing is attacking at the football. So that's going to be another thing is creating those turnovers.
Interesting. Going into this game against the Saints, if I had a dollar for as many tweets as I got in regard to asking about Darqua in a fantasy football level, was really hoping that he'd get a bigger and better opportunity this week. Of course, he did not. But there are a lot of fans out there beyond just Giants fans that want to see this young man have an opportunity and see what he can do. Hopefully, at one point in time, it'll happen.
No wasted motion. He runs hard. He gets downhill. He sees the holes. He has the strength to run through arm tackles and break tackles. You could tell when he gets the football, he runs tough. He runs hard, and he wants that physical activity.
Let's go to David in North Carolina. David, welcome in.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. Wanted to – glad David's on the show today. I hadn't had a chance to talk to him since he started hosting and or co-hosting. And, you know, a lot of calls about the running backs and the run game. And so I wanted to ask David about this and kind of the offense going forward. And I don't want to overreact with the way the Saints game and that pace because I know that's a unique situation. But in reference to some of the callers, you know, talking about the O-line with the 07 and the 011 team, you know, David, maybe you can comment on this. To me, it seemed like in the 2011 season, Gilbride kind of noticed that, you know, that team wasn't really a great ground and pound team either. And to me, you guys that year kind of let the pass set up the run game. And I see even a more extreme this year where this offensive line, I mean, it is what it is. And maybe the coaches can look at it with the bye week coming up. We're not going to be able to line up in the I formation or pro set and just pound yards out. I mean, you see it when we get down in the red zone, and whether it be an Andre Williams issue, but I think it's more of an offensive line issue. They're not going to be able to line up and beat up people as much as we'd like to see it. What I really enjoyed about the Saints game was the coaching staff realizing early on, hey, we're going to shoot out here. And it's a waste of time. As much as I'd love to give the defense a rest, we got to keep the foot on the gas. And I think going forward, you know, maybe not to that extreme, but I'd like to see the offense operate that way going forward. Hey, you know what? If we go three and out, we go three and out, but we're lining up three wide receivers, you know, four wide outs. Here it is. Our run game is going to be a lot of misdirection, draw, shotgun handoff, because to me, we're just wasting plays by trying to line up in traditional formations and run the ball, because these guys just don't get the push that we need to be able to do that. So I'd just like to see what David thinks about, you know, going forward. Like I say, I know it's not going to be as extreme as a Saints game and pile up 40 points and six touchdowns, but letting the pass set up the run, playing more of that hurry-up style, because I think that's what this offense does well. It's just not going to be able to line up and run the ball, and take some pressure off this defense, even though that would be the ideal situation to, you know, play keep away.
David?
Give this defense a break.
Thank you.
To the comments. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
You're actually bringing up a very good point, David, because you see a lot of offenses doing that now, is going to that short, quick passing game as an extension of the run, because what does it do? It forces a defense to spread out, especially when you're playing up against 3-4 defenses, because if you walk out and you have that slot, you're forcing that big linebacker, outside linebacker, who is usually a stand-up rush guy, you're forcing him to walk outside and play some coverage, whether it's on the tight end, you know, off-slotted, whether it's those that three bunch, that trips bunch that they have, it forces that linebacker out. But I agree with that. I think that it's helped the offensive line. Number one, it's helped Eli in this passing game get into a rhythm of getting quick up to the line of scrimmage and controlling the tempo of the football game. But also it's allowed the offensive line to settle in. It's allowed them to spread out defenses, and it allows them to run more things where it's not a full house tight end. You know, they play eight men in the box. It's making them force things out where you can run out of three wides, where you're getting maybe a different safety in there instead of a bigger linebacker. And to go back to you, I agree with you. I thought it was a great move, and it was exciting to see that the Ben McAdoo in this offense knew where they were in this football game, said, okay, we're in this type of game. We understand what we need to do, but at the same time, we're going to be aggressive and we're going to let it loose. And you got to give Eli Manning so much credit for the way that he played. Pressure in his face, it didn't matter. He had pocket presence. He had poise with his eyes downfield and his ability to get rid of it. So we'll see how it is moving forward here. But like I said, in November, December, whether it's setting it up with the pass or if it's starting with it, you've got to run the football if you expect to do anything.
All right. Again, just a reminder, fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment to DraftKings.com. Enter the promo code New York to play for free today. And as I promised, some bargain players heading into this week. You ready?
I'm ready.
You take notes?
Mental. Go.
Okay. Andy Dalton against Cleveland, $6,200. Phillip Rivers, who a lot of people are expecting him to just have a field day against the Chicago Bears, $6,900. And Ben Roethlisberger going up against Oakland, $6,600. Three of your best bargain quarterbacks on DraftKings heading into week 9. Your running backs, Jeremy Langford, looks like Matt Forte is not going to play this week. Going up against San Diego, they're giving up a ton of yards to opposing running backs. Only $4,000 this week on DraftKings. LeSean McCoy, $5,500 going up against Miami. And Jeremy Hill, interesting, with Hugh Jackson, the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati, what they're doing. They spent the first half of the season with a very heavy dose of Giovanni Bernard. Yep. And now, two things. Number one, they're starting to work Jeremy Hill into the mix, and their schedule gets a lot easier against opponents who allow a lot of rushing yards.
Which the Cleveland Browns defense does.
It does. So Jeremy Hill, $5,200 this week on DraftKings. I highly recommend you play him. Wide receivers, Malcolm Floyd, because now Keenan Allen is out for the season. Going up against Chicago for $3,900, as well as Stevie Johnson. He's dealing with a shoulder. If he does play, he's 32. Stephon Diggs going up against the Rams for $5,300. Allen Hurns going up against the Jets. Anticipation that Revis will be on Allen Robinson. Therefore, Allen Hurns for $5,300. And Rishard Matthews going up against the Bills for $4,500. So some quarterbacks, some running backs, and some wide receivers. Great bargain plays for you on DraftKings this week. Any final thoughts before we sign off, my friend?
Well, I think we're all hoping for the Giants to have a big win here and come back at home ready to go for the New England Patriots.
Absolutely. So if you missed any part of the show, by all means, you can watch it in its entirety right here on Giants.com. Also, players are practicing right now. They're done. Locker room opens at around 1:50 this afternoon. We'll head in there and get some interviews, talk about, again, hopefully, fingers crossed, Prince back, JPP back. So I'm sure hopefully a lot of optimism in that locker room today, and all those interviews will be up on Giants.com, so make sure you return for those as well. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. Come on, man, we need the work. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.